and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The President of the United States caused a real stir when speaking to Congress. Joe Biden brought up the possibility of American troops fighting Russian troops. This is the state of the failed Ukraine project. Facing failure on all fronts, Biden's only option is to expand the conflict? Really? Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Scott Ritter in Delmar. He is a former intelligence officer and a United Nations weapons inspector. And in Nashville, we have Steve Gill. He is an attorney and political commentator. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to you first, Scott. Zelensky, the president of Ukraine and supplicant of the United States in this affair here, he's visiting, I guess, as we're speaking now, Joe Biden. What do you think that conversation is going to be about? Scott.
Look, this is about Joe Biden using Zelensky as a prop to try and put pressure on the Republicans in Congress to pass a supplemental budget that includes money for Ukraine, for Israel, and a little bit of money for the southern border. He's going to make the case that Zelensky, the president of this wonderful democracy called Ukraine, cannot survive without American assistance, American assistance that he, Joe Biden, promised, American assistance that the United States Congress has regularly voted in favor of, and the failure of the Republicans to follow through on the obligations of the nation will represent a betrayal. So this is a grand act of theater.
Well, Steve, this same question to you, because I can't really surmise what exactly the United States is supposed to do, keep funding this money. Obviously, it looks like they've all but accepted failure, but they want to keep it going until the election so it isn't a weight around Biden's shoulders. But that's a kind of very cynical thing to do. So what, another 100,000 Ukrainian troops will die because of Joe Biden's political ambitions and ego? Go ahead, Steve.
Well, you've had about 300,000 or 400,000 die for that. I just really feel sorry for Zelensky's interpreter. Can you imagine trying to interpret the mumblings of Joe Biden in some sort of a coherent sense? I speak English and I can't understand him. The problem is, he said he wanted to be a wartime president. That's what his strategists have now come up with, is he can't be an economic president because Bidenomics is failing miserably. He can't be the border secure president because that's failed miserably, the energy president. So now he's left with trying to become the wartime president, and he is devoted to getting America into a war. And I will tell you this, the American people are about fed up with giving any money to Ukraine. I know they're more than fed up with sending any boots on the ground to Ukraine at this point or at any point in the near foreseeable future.
Well, speaking about troops here, Scott, Biden mentioned the possibility, quote, American troops fighting Russian troops. Now, that seems to me, ergo, he assumes that Russia will attack NATO if Ukraine fails. Why? That's a flawed logic here. It sounds like he wants that to happen to legitimize his failed Ukraine project. Scott.
I don't know if he wants it to happen, because, first of all, if it happened, we would go nuclear immediately, because NATO and the United States lack the military capability of prevailing in ground combat, large-scale ground combat against Russia. But it's as you noted, it's an absolutely false a premise. Russia, A, has no intention of attacking NATO, attacking Poland, attacking the Baltics. The Russians historically have always had a defensive posture. They were compelled to act in Ukraine because of years of NATO expansion and efforts by the collective West to turn Ukraine into a weapon against Russia. So Russia acted, preemptively. It's a preemptive self-defense was the justification that Vladimir Putin used under Article 51 of the United Nations Charter. But the other thing is, the Russian military, while it's very successful on the battlefield today, has limited capacity, limited capability. We learned this in the first phases of this conflict, where they tried to do too much with too little. 200,000 troops, there's a limit to what they can do. Well, there's a limit to what 600, 700,000 troops can do, meaning that they are capable of defeating the Ukrainian military. They are capable of seizing additional territory if tasked with that job, but they're not capable, as they currently stand, to occupy Ukraine, let alone launch a massive military invasion of Poland or the Baltic. So Joe Biden has created a fantasy world that he has populated with fantasy figures. The good news is that this will never happen, because this isn't Joe saying, I want to send American troops into Ukraine. This is Joe saying Russia will attack Poland. Russia won't attack Poland. So this is just politics as usual.
Yeah, Steve, it's really interesting also in the same conversation, and John Kirby, not the smartest guy in the room, is invoking Article 5 as if, you know, this is again something that, you know, is a tripwire, a threat directed at Russia, that there is just Article 5. I would be very, very cautious if I were John Kirby or the President of the United States and his useless Secretary of State Blinken, is that Article 5 is much more of a mythology than reality here, and I would advise them not to test it, because I don't think Portugal is going to go to war over Vilnius, okay? And I think the war in Ukraine has actually proven that. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, Scott is exactly right, and the Democrats and the Biden administration have been painting this boogeyman of Russia and Putin, that if we don't stop them in Donbass, they'll roll across Ukraine, occupy Ukraine, invade Sweden and Finland and Poland, and they'll dominate Europe militarily. Look, Ukraine is the size of Texas. Occupying a country that size is not going to be possible with the Russian military as it is, particularly when you get into the other side of Ukraine and you have folks that would be willing to fight for their homes. You'd have guerrilla warfare. And the idea that they would be invading, you know, Western Europe is just, again, the boogeyman that the Biden administration is trying to create so that members of Congress will look under their beds afraid they'll find Putin. When you look at the capacity of the U.S., as Scott mentioned, to engage in any kind of large-scale ground war, we've given most of our munitions to Ukraine that have been lost or wasted, or we left them behind in Afghanistan, or we've got the U.S. Department of Defense that can't account for them. And yet you've got the Secretary of Defense going to Congress demanding more money for Ukraine, saying, if you don't give us this money, we're going to send your sons and daughters and uncles and brothers to die. That kind of threat, I don't think, is going to play well with members of Congress. And again, I don't think it plays well with the American people.
Well, you know, Scott, you know, this whole saber rattling about, you know, attacking a NATO country and all that, you know, I know it's a lot of work for some people, but just look at the words that Russian officials have said. Let's actually go to the very beginning. Demilitarization and denazification. That means destroying the Ukrainian military that has been supported by NATO, and regime change in Kyiv. Those conditions haven't really changed, Scott.
No, you're 100% correct. Look, the thing here, though, is that there have been some voices in the Russian media. You know, Russia has some very inflammatory TV shows where you have personalities come on and say things. They're not official policymakers. They're speaking their own opinion. And so when you have people say, we're going to see this through, we're on to Warsaw, on to Berlin, all that does is feed the propaganda mills here in America and allow people to say, the Russians intend to come to NATO. But the reality is the Russian government speaks for Russia, not some pundit
I'm glad you brought it up, Scott. Everybody listening, everyone watching the program here. Yes, Russia has its own Sean Hannitys. Surprise, it does. It has its Joe Scarboroughs. Are you surprised? Okay. Does Joe Scarborough and Sean Hannity represent the U.S. government? Hardly. They may want to appeal to elements of the government, but they don't represent it. And I'm glad Scott brought that up. I see the same shows, same kind of hotheads, and some are very jingoistic. Absolutely they are, okay? But it's part of the entertainment landscape, unfortunately. Steve, let me go back to you. Again, you know, we have NATO defining Russia as an enemy since this conflict has started, much, much more, but unofficially. Now it's official here. Russia's going to react to that. I don't understand why people don't. If you're called an enemy, you're going to react to it. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, and the fact that this was a conflict that could have been completely avoided had Victoria Nuland from the State Department and Boris Johnson not swooped in to keep Zelensky from striking a deal on the front end. And then you had, Russia making it clear that the expansion of NATO to their border was intolerable. It was something that the U.S. had agreed not to do a decade or so ago. And yet you had Kamala Harris, kind of, again, lurching us into this conflict by announcing, oh, yeah, we're going to expand NATO into Ukraine. And the Russians don't know she's an idiot. The Russians don't know she's clueless. And they walked it back. But then their every action since then has been underlining, oh, we're going to expand the EU. We're going to expand NATO into Ukraine, which is, again, a breach of the promises that the U.S. has made in the past.
You know, absolutely. Words don't really mean very much. And unfortunately, that's what the Russians have learned from all this, the Minsk process and all that. Scott, we both watched the media. The failed peace process that the U.S. and the U.K. Torpedoed in the early parts of the conflict here. How often is that mentioned in the mainstream media? You and I talked about it in real time. I remember it in real time. Okay. It's never got an airing on the mainstream media. The public simply doesn't know that this conflict, first of all, could have been avoided. Second of all, it could have been shut down relatively quickly. Scott.
No, you're 100% correct, because first of all, to discuss what happened in March and April requires people to rethink the entire narrative that's been portrayed in the West of an aggressive Russia seeking territorial acquisition, seeking to destroy Kyiv. But when you look at the terms that Russia had agreed to, they were extraordinarily lenient. It almost, some people say, it almost was like Russia lost and was conceding things to Ukraine. That's how lenient
Scott. Scott, I remember at the time. I remember at the time, and I probably was talking to you about it. I said that would be defined as a strategic defeat.
It in retrospect, yes, but it shows how much Russia wanted to avoid what's happening today, how little appetite Russia had at the time for war. And believe me, Russia doesn't have an appetite for war today either.
All right, Scott, hold that thought. Gentlemen, I have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelch. Remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Scott. Scott, the rumor mill, there's a lot of whispers going on, but, more and more often you hear Zelensky's no longer the guy. And, of course, there's been an enormous amount of reporting in alternative media about the machinations going on in Kyiv. We have Zelensky's immediate lieutenants calling him delusional. That Time magazine article, the Economist article, those things don't happen by accident, okay? So there's a whole swirl going on around Zelensky. And then there are his competitors in the military that have more popularity than he does. After all, as you pointed out, there are no elections going on right now. So we have basically the little emperor, Zelensky. What are your thoughts about the stability of the regime?
Well, first of all, we just have to be honest and note that Zelensky is 100% the construct of the collective West, of the United States, of Great Britain, of NATO, of the European Union. He is a tool of the West. He serves a task. That is to be the public face of Ukraine that allows Western governments to justify the flow of hundreds of billions of dollars of money and resources into Ukraine. He is the propaganda element that we, the West, put out there to say, this is the man, this is the face of Ukraine, the face of freedom, the face of democracy, the man who's standing up to the evil Russian autocracy. And as long as, they can sell Zelensky that way, they can justify sending this money. But they can no longer, Zelensky, he's well past his use-by date. He doesn't serve that function anymore. And therefore, he's lost his utility, not only in the West, but in Ukraine, because he's not an effective leader. He's an artificial construct, and if he's not bringing in the money that fuels this corrupt regime and this corrupt nation and this ineffective military, if he's not bringing in the money to pad the bank accounts of these other corrupt Ukrainian officials, what use does he have? And the military is growing increasingly frustrated about Zelensky because of his insistence on kowtowing to the West to carry out counteroffensives that never had a chance of success. Always were going to sacrifice thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian lives just to continue the money flowing. Now the spigots are being turned off. Zelensky, I think, is on his final legs. He can't last much longer as the leader. We see a lot of movement inside Ukraine and outside Ukraine to replace him. And I think this trip to Washington, D.C. might be one of his last gasps as president of Ukraine.
Yeah, you know, Steve, Zelensky is like the perfect Western liberal. He likes to support ideas that have no impact on him personally. I'm sure there's a private jet all fueled up, ready to take him out. And, like Ghani out of Afghanistan. OK, but we're way ahead of ourselves. But that is one option here. You know, it's Steve, it's really interesting is that one of the there's been many different marketing attempts of this conflict in Ukraine. The most recent one is corporate welfare, the trickle down, like 95% of the money comes back to arms manufacturers as if that's a good thing. OK, but they keep reinventing their marketing to keep this going on. And, I don't feel sorry for arms makers. They always have a boon when there's a conflict going on. They like wars, okay? And Biden likes to serve their interests. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, and perhaps the most ridiculous assertion beyond the, it's just a loan, it's going to get paid back.
Oh, yeah.
All that money that we loaned into Europe after World War II. But Tim Scott said it even better when he claimed that this is a loan. It's going to get paid back. It's not just to supplement the arms dealers, and that money, as you pointed out, flows back to us. I mean, the ridiculous assertions of why it's good for America to promote a war in Ukraine. The best way you can tell that the Ukraine push has lost traction is you're not seeing the Ukraine pins worn on politicians and people around the country anymore. They've been replaced by the Israeli flag. And perhaps the best indication of Zelensky's lost power, I think he was Time Magazine Person of the Year last year. This year, it's Taylor Swift. That's how much things have shifted away from Ukraine.
And I really don't even know who that is, okay? But anyway, I'm sorry, I don't follow that stuff. I think the Academy Awards thing, I'm interested in that kind of stuff. Scott, what is the plan now? Just life support, just to get through the election cycle?
I think you hit the nail on the head there. This is not about the security of the West. The West is already adjusting to the inevitability of a Ukrainian defeat. You see NATO, you see the EU, you see the United States starting to move things behind the scenes to prepare themselves for a Russian victory. But politically, Biden can't concede that. First of all, he's looking for a scapegoat, and that scapegoat's going to be the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
He is going to say, I did everything I could. It was the Republicans who denied the funding. Therefore, the Republicans are responsible for the defeat of Ukraine. Now, if the Republicans happen to cough up the money, then what you're going to see is what we've already seen. Well, it's Ukrainians' fault. We gave them every resource they needed, but their military wasn't good enough. They didn't have what it takes. Anything to push the blame away from Biden, because we are into the silly season. We are less than a year away from a presidential election, which means America has gone brain dead. We're now only about politics, and politics is all about shifting blame onto other people, taking credit where you can. And this is what Biden's going to be doing with Ukraine. We've lost this war. Ukraine has lost this war. Right now, it's about ensuring that the consequences of this defeat don't blow back on Joe Biden politically, that he pushes as much of the blame for this Ukrainian debacle onto other people.
Well, and also to Scott and Steve here, we have to keep in mind there was somebody at Responsible Statecraft that wrote a couple weeks into the conflict that Ukraine has already won. Very interesting title, because I would say that once a settlement, and it will be a defeat, then there's going to be the blame game inside of Ukraine. Who took the money? Where is the money? Where is this guy? It's going to be chaotic, very, very chaotic. Steve,
you've already had senior officials get fired for corruption by Zelensky. First of all, it was various ministers, and then top folks in the defense ministry getting fired for corruption. They've taken the money. The U.S. can't account for the money. They can't account for the money, as billions of dollars have been misplayed. And I think the other critical thing is that you can, I think, blame Ukraine for this loss, because we were told about all the patriotic, we're going to defend our country, and yet there are hundreds of thousands of young Ukrainian men who have fled the country to avoid the draft, recognizing they'd rather go to jail afterwards rather than go to the front lines and die now. And with all this patriotic push that we got, the propaganda that Ukraine is fighting for itself, why are they having to drag 16-year-old boys out of malls? Why are they having to put 70-year-old men on the front lines? Because the Ukrainian people aren't wanting to fight for Donbass and Donetsk and Mariupol. They don't see any reason to fight for it. Why are we fighting for it? And again, I don't think Americans want our kids to fight for places that that don't even matter to the Ukrainians.
Yeah, Scott, and the demographic crisis is horrific for Ukraine. I mean, depending on who you ask, and the Ukrainians have been notorious of bad with their statistics here, but there are some estimates that the population of Ukraine now is approximately half it was when it got its independence. That happens very rarely, very rarely. Scott.
Well, what we're looking at is a failed state. I mean, there have been many people in Russia, including Vladimir Putin, who have articulated Ukraine as an artificial state. But what we're looking at right now is a failed state. You talked about, the chaos that will break out in Ukraine as people are looking to blame. That assumes that there's going to be a Ukrainian government that
good point.
Operates independently and sovereignty. Denazification means the end of the Zelensky regime. It means the end of the Ukrainian Rada, the parliament. It means the end of the constitution as it's currently configured. It means the end of Ukraine as it's currently governed. There will be a new government in Ukraine. There has to be. And I believe this government will be handpicked by the Russians. And so there won't be as much chaos as you think. I think there will be a lot of retribution. I think there will be a lot of accountability. But the bottom line is Ukraine as it existed in 2014 will never exist again. And I think I had an interesting conversation with a senior Russian official just last week. And he basically said that Ukraine has a very limited window of opportunity right now to strike a deal that will allow Ukraine to have the maximum territory and sovereignty, that the longer this goes on, that offer will be off the table and you'll be looking at a completely different outcome than the one that could be offered today. But either way, Ukraine is strategically defeated and the terms of Ukraine's future will be dictated by Russia, not by some sort of negotiation between Ukraine and the West.
Yeah, and Steve,
Scott is exactly right.
Go ahead, jump in.
Let me ask you guys. Scott is exactly right. That's what happens to Ukraine going forward. What happens to Russia going forward? I mean, the demonization of Putin and Russia in the West and in America, how do you now bring Russia back to the table and say, okay, all is well, all is forgiven, sanctions are off, they're going to be a buddy again. How do you move that machinery back into bringing Russia into the world of nations
I want to be kind to all three of us, but we won't see that in our lifetime. This is a generational breach that will not be mended for a very long time. Those sanctions will not come to an end because the West, NATO land, cannot accept that it was wrong, okay? Because of they're virtuous. Russians aren't. They're the rule of law, rules-based order. They can't change that way. We're almost out of time here. But I do have a way out for them. At least Putin didn't make it to Paris. We won, Steve.
That's exactly right. You know, I was in Ukraine in Donbass area, Donetsk and Mariupol for the elections. And, you know, we keep hearing from, again, the Biden administration, this is occupied territory. Look, I embedded in Iraq a couple of times. Scott has been in actual occupied territories. Donetsk and Mariupol are not occupied. You're not seeing Russian soldiers on every corner. The lies from the beginning of this need to be dealt with, and the media in the Western Europea and America have blood on their hands.
Well, it's all because of occupied Washington. That's why we've gotten here. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Nashville and in Del Mar. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.